Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, and this is Paddock Experience. My name is Jordan Lewis, and alongside me, as always, is Greg Foreman. We got an interesting show for you today. We're going to be talking about a lot of things that have been occurring over the second week of testing in Bahrain. They're discovering a lot of, you know, problems with the car, fixing a lot of problems with the car, too, from last week. The heat in Bahrain is actually helping them discover, I mean, that's the whole point of testing, is helping them discover, you know, new problems in new different types of climates.
Yeah, it's more close to the race environment that they'll see in Australia, so as far as temperature anyways.
Yeah, and the teams are actually discovering that some of these changes, they're not what they expected at all. Like with the tires, they sort of thought the tires would get softer with a lighter car, that Pirelli might change it, but they're actually finding the tires, they're actually having problems trying to keep heat in the tires, unlike last year where they're trying to keep them cool and everything.
Yeah, Pirelli changed it so that they have a more consistent tire. So that in effect basically has changed the way that the tires work altogether, and as well as having a turbo engine instead of a naturally aspirated V8 in the back, that changes up the tires as well.
Well, I also think that's changed how they set up the car. I mean, they're kind of expecting these tires to, you know, fall off a cliff and not last long at all. Yeah, Nico Rosberg said in an interview that basically what I just said, where the tires are going to, they're going to have a hard time keeping the heat in the tires. This is not what they expected. I mean, they're going to have to overcompensate on downforce, but you know, when you overcompensate on downforce, you're losing a lot of speed on those straights.
And interesting note is in 2015, there will be no tire warmers, but we'll talk about that later, but that is a new rule. So
just one of the other twists that the FIA are bringing to Formula One. I got to tell you, after reading all this news, Red Bull sticks out to me in the headlines in a different way than it was last year.
That is most certainly true. Let's go over like a real quick thing. Red Bull's fastest time of testing in Bahrain was 1:39.837, set by Daniel Ricciardo. Next fastest is Caterham with Kwimi Kobayashi, and he sets a 1:39.855. which is 0.02 of a second away from Red Bull. Red Bull's fastest is 0.02 of a second faster than Caterham, and that's it.
Yeah, let's get something straight, folks. I'm not being biased towards other teams or hating Red Bull. I'm being biased in the way for Formula One as a sport has become instantly more competitive for other teams. We're talking low-level teams like Williams and Caterham finally have a chance. Anything can happen this season with Formula One. I mean, I don't even care who you are, nobody can predict anything that's going to happen this summer. It's definitely going to be one for the books.
Yeah, I mean, I had a friend of mine ask me who I thought would win, really, the first Australian race and who I thought would win the overall, and I honestly sat there a good 5 minutes trying to think of, you know, the answer, because you truly don't know. You don't know, no matter how well you know the sport, you don't know.
Yeah, you just kind of have to sit there and you're like,
whoever finishes the race, that's what I said at first. I said if they can finish the entire race, then they're going to be in good shape in the first race.
Yeah, I mean, if I had to pick somebody, it's going to be McLaren or Mercedes.
Somebody with a Mercedes engine in the back.
Yeah, Magnussen or Rosberg. I mean, it could be between the three: Hamilton, Magnussen, and Rosberg. I don't think Ferrari with Kimi or Alonso are going to be up there. They really haven't been standing out. Who knows? Some of these teams might be hiding tweaks on their cars. Who knows? I sure as heck know Red Bull's not. Because if you're Red Bull, you don't. I don't care who you are. You don't pass up on testing opportunities like this. What I'm trying to say is this is not a ruse. They're not keeping their car behind curtains. They're not doing things secretively, because I don't think you can pass up opportunities like this to test all out, take your car to the limits and push the envelope with your car to see what it does with the tires, see what it does with the heat, the biggest challenge that even like Rosberg was just saying, I don't think you can pass up the opportunity to test with the only 100 liters of fuel that they are allowed for the races.
Well, I mean, last year, if the rules never changed this year, yeah, sure, Red Bull could hang out and sandbag all day because they were that good. But now, with everything new, new front wing, new power unit, new energy recovery system, new rear wing, you know, everything has changed, and you can't just pass up everything. So, yeah, what you're saying is testing is very important, really. I mean, nothing else about it, but you can't just throw it all away and expect to be good this year. And Renault even said that they were behind in their engine development. So it took this long to get it out of them, but they admit they're behind.
Yeah, I mean, I hate quoting Rosberg, but it was such a great interview. And, you know, they asked him, you know, what do you think about Red Bull? What do you think about their problems or, you know, such little progress? And, you know, he was explaining that it's going to be night and day, and it's going to be clear at what teams have had time to test, what teams, you know, have been addressing their problems severely. Not to say that Red Bull's not. I'm sure they are. They're not just sitting in their paddocks with their, you know, fingers twiddling over each other. It's going to be night and day showing that who's spent the money, spent the time, and managed it well throughout the off season.
Yeah, and, you know, you saw that Red Bull would consistently change the reason why they didn't have a good testing, or, you know, they constantly kind of search for a scapegoat, it seemed like to me. That's just my opinion. You see Renault teams having testing and putting in a lot of laps over testing, yet with Red Bull and Toro Rosso, you don't see them putting in nearly as many laps as the other teams with Renault power. Sure, Renault engines might not be the best at the moment, Renault even says, but there's also some other issue, and it's not Renault's fault because there's other teams that are putting in a lot more laps. That's just what's on paper, so you can't just make that up.
Yeah. One of the former engineers for Red Bull was actually stating that he thinks Red Bull tried taking a shortcut and basically taking the same type of schematic, electrical schematic from last year's car and put it into this one, when last year they were already having problems with the alternator and fires in the battery, fires with the KERS, you know, problems with the KERS system. And so basically taking an amped up car like that and trying to downsize it and hope that, you know, I'm sure they made tweaks to it, but hoping that this electrical system would be flawless, I think that's kind of foolish for Red Bull. I can totally see where this is becoming a problem.
Yeah.
A lot of the other teams started with a clean slate.
Yeah, I mean, like, Weber, his car literally was on fire, and no other cars, maybe the past two seasons, has that happened to. I think maybe 2 years ago we saw Force India or something on fire, but not as consistently as Red Bull was having issues, and three quarters of the way through the year, their car was on fire before the race finished. Well, we talked about some of the bad, but how about some of the good of testing? I mean, we got to see a bunch of new drivers. Actually, a few of the reserve drivers got a bit of testing this year, which honestly, I didn't think would happen because the teams want to get so many laps in. I didn't think that we'd see very many reserve drivers, but we actually got to see a few from the mid-range teams. Did you get to catch any, like, how quick they were this year at all?
No, I definitely think there's something to be said for teams allowing reserve drivers to get in the car and know where their teams are standing at the beginning of the season. So throughout the season, a reserve driver will be able to tell, you know, this is how far the car's come, we need to fix this, instead of throwing them into a car after, you know, the first race in Melbourne and having them, you know, back home testing and be like, well, you know, this needs to be fixed. Well, all in all, that's already been fixed. But I just think the teams are taking this and this, you know, they're being smart about the situation, and they wanted to get the reserve drivers some time.
So like you're saying, like, since they've actually got to be in the car on day one, in the future they can say, this is better or worse than the baseline that I've ever been able to test, instead of just sitting in a simulator and never having a real feel for the car?
To my perspective, what's better than having two drivers in, you know, in a car? Three, having a third opinion. I mean, we got great drivers. We got Rosberg, we got Hamilton, you know, we got Magnussen, we got, you know, Button, and of course, Ricciardo, Vettel. I mean, they're all great drivers, but other drivers can point out things too. I mean, Massa, he's out at Williams. You know, having a third opinion on this car can only benefit, and I think that's what they're coming from.
And we also got to see kind of an inside issue that Caterham had. Marcus Ericsson actually doesn't have a super license at the moment, but he's their number two driver. So what they did in testing in Bahrain is they got him over the, I think it's 100 kilometer limit, so that he could actually get his super license in time for Australia, which is kind of interesting. You know, you don't ever hear about teams hiring drivers that don't actually have their super license or couldn't actually get in the car on whenever they needed to and put out a race. So that's kind of interesting to me.
Yeah, definitely. Referring back to reserves, just seeing like Charles Peak join Lotus, you can definitely tell that these teams are trying to grab the best reserves or even ones that have raced in last year's car. I believe what the championship's going to come down to this year is testing, putting the reserve drivers in the car back home. A lot of the championships, I feel like, aren't going to be won on the track. They're going to be won behind the scenes, testing, changing things constantly, you know, things that we won't even be knowing that's happening during the race. So I just feel like a lot of teams are being smart and trying to snatch up great reserve drivers. And if not, they're the fastest, but the most technical aware, you know, have a great technical awareness throughout the car.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's for sure. Because, you know, they're going to be having to do a ton of work on the simulators if they're going to get any progress in real life, real form. So to have somebody that has race experience on your simulator that can give you feedback, you know, on the days that you're out on the circuit and you can't actually have all your drivers and all your engineers there at the simulator, is a real, real plus for the teams.
Yeah, I also think, like, I mean, I don't mean to get on the topic of reserve for so long, but I mean, I feel like it's been so overlooked in these past few years that, you know, reserve driver is becoming very important. A great example was at the end of last season. We had Kimi out in the last few races. You know, Lotus had a reserve driver, but they apparently didn't think he was good enough to be in the last few races, so we had to bring in Kovalainen last year. So it just goes to show that, you know, you must have a good reserve driver. You can't always just go searching for him last minute. It's not the greatest plan, so I feel like a lot of teams are using reserve drivers to their advantage and for testing, for backup. I think you have to prepare for every aspect this year.
Yeah, Lotus's reserve had, I think it was one race in 2012, under his belt, and that was in Monza. But now these reserves, they're getting real time and real tests with the car, so possibly they might be better prepared for a real race simulation if they needed to be in it, instead of hiring a retired driver who currently doesn't know the cars as well.
I just feel like you can't stress enough how important behind the scenes are going to be this year with this brand new car. I mean, there's so many things we can talk about, but
I mean, we could show a team if they needed a reserve or anything. If I had to, I guess I could do it for you guys. Well, there was actually something that I saw. I was reading like the live blogs of testing, and somebody brought up the idea of getting rid of DRS. Since there was less downforce this year, and the whole issue of passing was if you got behind somebody with a ton of downforce, the wake would be too much and you would never be able to pass them really, because you couldn't use their draft or anything. You would just get sucked into the under pressure. So the idea is, since there's less downforce, the possibility of getting rid of DRS. What do you think about that?
I personally, I'm all for better competition, you know, more entertainment. And I think the FIA should be concerned about that. Drawing in more people, creating such a competitive field like they just did with these new adjustments. To me, I feel like last season, if you were obviously within a second or even closer behind somebody, you're going to get passed. There's no fighting it, because you either get a penalty for blocking or possibly sending them off the track. Then you definitely have a penalty. But, you know, I just feel like once you're behind somebody, boom, you're automatically in pass. But creating an environment where you're not allowed DRS just kind of pushes the drivers more to take advantage of corner passes and just drafting regular old drafting in general. Stay, get behind that driver, stay, don't pass because you can't, but take advantage and make, you know, smart strategic passes in the corners.
Well, I mean, for me, I don't really agree with that. I like DRS, and what you said, it brings in more people, because now there's more passing with DRS. If you're within a second, you can open up the back end of your wing slot, reduce a ton of drag, get about 10 or 15 kilometers an hour faster than the car ahead of you, you know, that's almost a guaranteed pass. And to me, that's exciting. And to a lot of people on TV, I think that's exciting. And I think it's important for the sport as well, because it's been in the sport for years now. And it's not like a topic of controversy to me. I don't see teams getting really mad about it or, you know, being really passionate about it. Sure, Vettel had a fit about it when Hamilton passed him, but he got to use it the very next lap too. So I don't know. I feel like it's a good part of the sport, and it's a consistent rule. It's not like some teams have better DRS than others. No, it's a consistent rule. So to me, I like it.
Well, I just feel like no DRS, that would push these guys even more to develop more aerodynamic, you know, features in the car. Like, who really could develop a great aerodynamic car, and, you know, who would make it go fastest on the track? Well, and maybe at that point, what would make it even more interesting is, okay, yeah, no DRS, but you're allowed to change wings and, you know, front and rear. That would be something, that would definitely be something that I could see happening if DRS went away.
So, like, you're saying that you wouldn't have a fixed depth of the wing, like you could make a huge wing or a really small wing?
Yeah, you can make whatever wing you want and change it within the race, I feel. Bringing out who's the smartest, who did the most, well, who discovered the most in practice, and I just think that would be another great tiered aspect. Like we said, you know, it's what makes Formula One more interesting. Yes, DRS would be taken away, but teams would have to be smarter about what wings they bring on, and they would be allowed to change it, so nobody can, you know, be too upset and be like, oh, you know, we're restricted to this much. Well, you know, you can change whatever wing you want, and if you choose a crappy one, then that's your fault. It's, I don't know. I just think maybe you do it for 1 year, take it away, see what happens, but I feel like teams wouldn't be too opposed to that.
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think it's an evolution of what you're saying is the changing of the wings during the race. Like, before DRS, we got to see the front wing flaps being able to be changed, like, I think it was 3 or 4 times per lap. They could change the flap of the front wing. And I think it's an evolution of that idea. And I don't know, it's part of the car now, and it's, like I said, it's a consistent rule. And nobody's going to be better or worse at it. So it's an even shot for everybody to have that opportunity to pass a little bit better.
Yeah, but there's features within the rear wing that make your DRS better. It's not just the flap. I mean, if you have a certain amount of resistance on the crown, on the top of the rear wing, you have a more severe curve than the other, even when the DRS is on. I feel like you're going to get enough drag. Just, I mean, it'll be micro amounts, but I don't know. We could argue about this all day, but I mean, you know.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, well, it's not going to change. That's the rule is what it is right now. Maybe for 2015 it might change, but as of right now, DRS remains, and it's changed a little bit. The gap that the wing creates is a little bit bigger this year, so it could make you go a little bit faster, maybe. We'll see, because, again, you do have that first part of the wing, and also the flap that comes up, you can still shape that flap, too, so it does change a little bit.
Yeah, folks, don't be afraid to butt in on these conversations. These aren't just two-way discussions. We have a Facebook page. We have a Twitter. You can leave comments on our website. Just go ahead and give us your input, what you think, you know, opinions or questions, you know, topics you want us to address. So we like to keep the crowd interacted, and we like to, you know, have new ideas and everything to talk about.
Yeah, this is a conversation we have daily. So just join our conversation, you know, that's pretty much what we're looking for.
Well, folks, we hope to see you again. It's been a great episode. Don't be afraid to leave comments on our website and on Facebook and Twitter. We look forward to hearing you again, and we hope to see you next week.